Last year, I think I reported some on the 2012 Indiana General Assembly, and it's a state that's wrestling with the science and religion issue, and this is kind of an update. The 2013 session of the General Assembly, Senator Cruz is a very conservative Republican from the northeastern section of Indiana, and Member Thompson is from another part. But Senator Cruz decided he didn't want to submit a bill after his experience. But Representative Thompson did submit a bill. And the reason is that they're working together. The local newspaper reports indicate that. And also that either together or alone, they're also working with the Discovery Institute in developing legislation. And that's not surprising. It happens all the time. And so this is the bill. And it's kind of a little bit convoluted and sometimes hard to read, and we're going to go through it quickly because it's not the details that work, it's the better thing, but the bill's rather lengthy. It starts out Section A, the General Assembly finds that it's an important educational purpose, and I've got the really important part colored there in orange rather than blue. But developing students' critical thinking skills is a very important piece in their legislation. And again, some subjects, including but not limited to science and some others, have produced differing conclusions on theories and topics. Notice that religion is missing, although that's a course that comparative religion is not an uncommon course to see in Indiana schools. So you have to be sensitive to what's there and what's not there. And also that quite often teachers are not quite sure about what to do, what the expectations might be, and how and when they should present information, and how and what they should not present. And so the bill continues, and this is interesting because this is Section B. It says this section applies to accredited schools, which is a wide range of things, but there's nothing else in the section. I think what really the legislature meant to say is that this applies to the following sections, which are the state board, the department, governing bodies, et cetera, and so forth. Again, develop critical thinking skills is a very important part of the legislation. And then a little bit later, we get down into this even more some familiar phrases, and that's teach the strengths and weaknesses. Teach strengths and weaknesses of the conclusions of theories being presented by the course, and we're still going through HB 83, and again, it's rather detailed, and if you read through this, it's for different kinds of accredited schools. There are lots of different kinds of accredited schools now that Indiana has homeschooling and charter schools and public schools and private schools, and if they're accredited then by the appropriate agency, then they're applied. And here we go with strengths and weaknesses again, and finally, we're going to get to the end of this, and here's the most important, I think, part of it. This section may not be construed to promote any religious or non-religious doctrine, discrimination for or against any particular set of religious beliefs or non-beliefs, discrimination for or against religion or non-religion. This bill died a quick death. The speaker indicated that it was not going to be discussed. It wasn't even discussed in the committee it was sent to in the House, which was the Education Committee. And it didn't even receive a committee hearing, even though education was a very high priority in the Indiana legislature this year, as in past years. Why, and this is my hypothesis, I think a reasonable one. You may want to agree or disagree with it, but it has to do with the Indiana situation. Indiana legislators are concerned that schools, if they enacted something like this, if the legislature passed the law and they enacted it, they might come under scrutiny by the courts and be sued and lose money. In large numbers, lots of money in terms of legal fees. So that brings us to the question, is there a scientific, because this is all about a scientific con, controversy over evolution. Is there one? Well, the Pew Research Center poll, which is pretty recent, found this, that about 97% of scientists say that humans and other living things have evolved over time. 97%. And of that, about 87% of those scientists are saying, at least those who responded to the poll, that evolution involves natural processes such as natural selection and others. But this is the main one. There is no real science controversy. This is about as uniform as it gets. When things you in science, I'm a science educator. I teach teachers how to teach science. You know that there are always folks who are disagreeing and dissenting from whatever the prevailing theory is and whatever the prevailing issue. And once you get to 85, 90% agreement, that's made sometimes 95, that's probably about as good as it gets. And so there is real no, at least according to this data, or these data, there is no real scientific controversy over this issue. But is there a social controversy about evolution? The same poll shows that about 32% of the public say that living things have evolved via natural processes, such as natural selection. Definitely. Definitely there is a social controversy. So let's take a look at the Discovery Institute. Again, it's the leading advocate and really the originator of intelligent design theory. And after Dover v. Kitzmiller, which we'll discuss in more detail a little bit later, the Discovery Institute, had to change its strategy or direction of advocacy of intelligent design. And we'll get into that a little bit more later. And it now emphasizes what's known as what they call an academic freedom strategy in teaching about what they call science controversies. I'm using that term because they use it, not because I think there is a science controversy. I don't think there is one. There definitely is a social controversy. Here's an academic freedom policy, which, given that the Dover case happened over, in 2005, this policy just now appeared this February on the website, and maybe a little bit before. The DI is now opposing any effort to require the teaching of intelligent design by school districts or state boards. Opposing. That's kind of a shocker. They're now opposing. However, the DI seeks to increase the coverage of evolution in textbooks. It thinks that evolution should be fully and completely presented and learn more about it, including unresolved issues. In other words, evolution should be taught as a scientific theory that's open to critical scrutiny, et cetera, and so forth. And again, here's where the Indiana language and in the past Tennessee and other states have been picking this up. Believes the curriculum aims to provide students with an understanding of the strengths and weaknesses of chemical and biological evolution. And again, the policy continues, scientific controversies in other states and so forth. And Tennessee and Louisiana and Mississippi have enacted legislation. Again, the scientific strengths and weaknesses or terminology that's part of that bill. And again, shall not be construed to promote any religious or non-religious doctrine, promote discrimination, or either for or against particular sets of religious beliefs or non-beliefs, so on and so forth. This is the kind of the language that they're using in their policies and in their work with legislators around the country to develop legislation that sometimes is passed and sometimes is not. Here's an interesting one. The U.S. Supreme Court in Edwards v. Aguiar they say, strongly affirm that individual teachers' rights to academic freedom, and also recognize, and I think I should have probably put strongly affirmed in orange, because we're going to find out it's not quite that much. Required the teaching of creationism in case it was unconstitutional, and teaching a variety of theories, and et cetera, and so forth. And there's a little star down there. The so-called strong affirmation of that particular district, or that particular case, is a point made in Justice Scalia's dissenting opinion, not a point made in the winning opinion. It's a point made, but it's interesting because the Discovery Institute's looking for every opportunity that it can to pick out something and work with it. I guess I would say in summary of this that they've overstated it a bit. But that's them. Now, obviously, and Dennis mentioned it a while ago, and we shouldn't have to even show this, but here it is. Congress, and this is what makes this a special case. We have to remember that, as I've said before, in lots of venues, our ancestors who came to this country were the founders and the first groups to come over, basically rejects and outcasts and extremists. And out of that came, and other things came, one of those issues was religion, of course. And so we have this as the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And there are other parts to it, but this is the part that counts here. Let's look at Kitzmiller v. Dover. Dover is a quiet, rural, kind of blue-collar community, 20,000 or so, just south of Harrisburg, the capital of Pennsylvania. And it's the site of the first court test of the constitutionality of intelligent design. Judge's ruling. Dover's ID policy is unconstitutional according to the First Amendment of the Constitution and also according to the Pennsylvania Constitution. The judge concluded after hearing the arguments that intelligent design is not science. Rather, intelligent design is a very strong endorsement of a particular religious view. And it also exposed a logical fallacy that goes way back to looking at young earth creationist arguments. And that fallacy is that evidence against evolution equals evidence for something else, in this case, intelligent design. The young earthers have been using that for a long time, that evidence against evolution was evidence for their particular view. And of course, it's a logical fallacy. And the source is the opinion itself, written by the judge. And you might wonder about that, and sometimes you may have heard things about, well, this must have been a rather liberal judge. This judge was appointed by President Ronald Reagan. So how might the Kitzmiller v. Dover thing apply to Indiana and even other states? What's the purpose for these kinds of things? What's the purpose for singling out evolution for special scrutiny? What's the purpose? What's the intent? And for defining science to allow non-scientific explanations, according to the Lemon test, which is a well-known and still often used test in court cases of this kind of thing, the intent and the effect of an action must not advance religion, and the action must not eventually entangle government and religion. Let's take a look at the 20-year goals for the intelligent design written by and developed by folks at the Discovery Institute. To see ID as the intelligent design as the dominant scientific perspective. To see intelligent design theory applied across not just the natural sciences, but the social sciences, humanities, and the arts. And to see intelligent design permeate our religious, cultural, moral, and political lives. And this is excerpted from the Wedge strategy, which was developed by Philip Johnson, who was, I believe, a law school dean at Berkeley, and was a fellow who developed that. And the other citation is from the American biology teacher by Burke, who is arguing against it. An example of DI activists' thinking is next. From the 6th century up to the Enlightenment, it's safe to say that the West was thoroughly imbued with Christian ideals and that the Western intellectual elites were overwhelmingly Christian. False ideas were that undermined the very foundations of Christian faith were swiftly challenged and uprooted. But since the Enlightenment, we haven't so much as lacked the means to combat these false ideas as the will and the clarity to do so. It's William Dembski and co-author in Unapologetics, which was written just after the turn of the century. Another example, the scientific picture of the world champion since the Enlightenment is not just wrong, but massively wrong. Indeed, entire fields of inquiry, especially in the human sciences, will need to be rethought from the ground up in terms of intelligent design. Again, William Dembski. Well-known and part of the Discovery Institute. Well, there are two unavoidable questions that you have to ask about intelligent design. When were life, Earth, and the universe designed? And then, who's the designer? Answer to when leads to who. Life, scientific agreement right now is around 3.5 billion years, give or take a few billion or a few million, I'd assume. Earth, somewhere around 4.5. Universe, somewhere in the 12 to 13 billion years ago. It's my answer. I don't know anybody else who's that old and beyond the universe. So in terms of the four lenses, as we haven't really talked about that much, ID is not science, at least not in my mind. Open questions and unresolved issues are not necessarily strengths and weaknesses. I mean, tell me a science theory that does not have open questions and unresolved issues. There are none. The nature of science has been studied and researched for 100 years and more. And one of the fundamental precepts of nature of science is that scientific knowledge is durable and tentative. And sometimes tentative might seem a little too weak, but it's flexible and it changes. That does not necessarily mean it's a weakness. And yet, some folks are portraying it as such, and we have to watch about that. ID is a religious view, and God's a designer. And I don't know what you're thinking right now, but I have a fairly strong religious view. I'm not an atheist. I'm not an agnostic. I'm a Methodist. you may want to say, wait a minute, they don't have a theology, but they do. It's called rest. Reason, experience, scripture, and tradition, and John Wesley said you're supposed to juggle those things at about the same weight, so to speak. And if either one gets too weighty, any of them, then you kind of get out of control with it. I don't see the conflict between science and religion. I just do not see it. I might be wrong, but that's my view. A federal district court, so here comes the law. Federal district court has ruled that intelligent design is a strong endorsement of a religious view. And that's important. It is a district court, and so the force of law is only there in that federal district, the middle, I believe it's the middle district of Pennsylvania. However, it's going to be, and it is a precedent, and will get discussed in any future court cases and current court cases around this issue. And last but not least, I think the Discovery Institute is really compromising its integrity, and we get to the truth issue, when it advocates that the legislative text that includes the phrase such as may not be construed to promote religion or may not be construed to promote whatever, when in fact that's exactly their intent. Questions, comments, suggestions?
Actually, I have one.
Yeah.
The problem is that, let's say, I as a physicist, all right, look at something like general relativity. And, you know, we still don't have a good quantum or way to quantize it.
Right.
It doesn't involve singularities and stuff like that. There is no social controversy about that. But, you know, while I agree with everything you say, it still makes us realize that we have to do something about the social quantum controversy question.
Right.
So, you know, while I agree with everything that you say there, you know, it's not going to be, in quotes, just, in other words, if somehow I come up with a great curriculum that explains why general relativity and our knowledge of gravity is incomplete, will that create a social controversy? Will it address the social controversy? You know,
right.
I'm just saying that question is right. Still out there.
Yeah.
It needs to be dealt with.
Yeah, and it could, but that would be, I think, first dealt with your own, within your own physics community. I mean, while they're wrestling with stuff. In other words, this is the evolution's in a different kind of position in the sense that you've got 85, 90, 95% of the scientific community saying, this is our theory. And yeah, there are always problems and issues with theories, but when it gets that high, there is really no scientific controversy.
No, but I'm just saying that then, you know, what the elephant in the room is that there is a social controversy.
That yes, that's right.
It doesn't exist, for example.
That's right, with yours.
Science,
yeah.
In physics, for example.
Yeah, and so, in fact, since you mentioned quantum mechanics, my favorite thing about that, of course, in learning reality is that you have to face the issue that the act of observing anything at that level creates the reality of that's observed. And so, what are you really seeing?
One interpretation, right?
Right. A popular one. That's like, say, one of them. There are others. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm wondering about the academic freedom aspect. While it's certainly appropriate for professors in universities and colleges to have academic freedom, I'm wondering how much academic freedom is appropriate for a teacher in, let's say, an elementary school or a middle school. I mean, it would seem as though there should be more supervision, more prescription
right.
of what they teach than would be appropriate in a university or a college.
There is. Your intuition is very correct. Academic freedom is not something that really even exists all that much in K through 12. What's followed, and especially in this day and age, are the standards, the state standards and the national standards. In this day and age, elementary, middle, and high school teachers are focused on teaching toward the standards.
So this isn't really a good strategy to emphasize academic.
Not at the K to 12 level. No. Because their issue is looking at the standards. Are are these issues in the standards? If they are, then you can do some of those kinds of things. But the standards tend to be the major policy that guide things, because the tests that are taken to judge student advancement are supposedly based on the standards. And then the more controversial thing is the issue of those tests are also in a position in many states to determine teachers' capabilities and even their salaries. Now, as a person with I have a fairly extensive learning and measurement. That whole concept is, in my humble opinion, a disaster waiting to blow up, in the sense that the tests and the scoring instruments that are used, especially with the teachers, have mediocre reliability. If they have mediocre reliability, they have worse than that validity, and there are too many factors outside that arena that influence students' learning. I mean, I taught high school kids chemistry for 7 years a long time ago, before that kind of thing came into effect. And it's a very complicated sort of environment. Yeah. Am I getting the high sign?
Right. No,
okay.
I'm going to make just an amplification of that. In my own daughter's AP biology course in a secular school, the teacher said, well, there's tons to cover in it, but the teacher said, all right, we know that this area is controversial. For the next 20 or 30 minutes, you can say whatever you want. Ask the questions. And I really admire that teacher, and that teacher was by far the teacher that my student, my daughters, loved the most, just as a general teacher.
Yeah.
What are examples of something like the attempt to legislate time might be useful as a caution to legislatures? So, 1800s, Indiana, a transmission got a bill in saying that Indiana, using his discovery that I equal 4, that they could have exclusive rights to that if they put in a bill on
yeah.
that.
Yeah, was it pi equal 4 or pi equal 3? I thought it was 3, but you're right. It was the Indiana legislature.
That one, just plain frank note, religious connection there, but the illustration is.
Yeah.
Kind of need to make sure you know what you're doing going in, and how much you can use that as a caution.
Yeah, educational policy is way often. We're far too often made on the basis of the values of who's deciding the policy, not necessarily the research that would support or disagree with a particular policy. I mean, we could go for another hour on the gory details of the tests that are or assessment instruments that are being used to evaluate teachers and how unreliable and invalid they are. But they're there because policymakers value that idea for certain reasons, not because of the measurement involved, because the measurement involved is a disaster.